Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's Fiction Podcast. I'm Janet Hutchings, Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's editor. Mystery novelist and short story writer Donna Andrews has won 3 Agatha Awards for her fiction. One of those awards was for her EQMM story, A Rat's Tale. That story, like the one she reads for us today, made a departure from the traditional material of the mystery and incorporated some elements of fantasy. We thought a fanciful story involving trolls, zombies, vampires, and wizards would be just right for this October episode in our series. But you won't be disappointed if what you like in a mystery is a puzzle and a rational solution, because this versatile author has incorporated those elements in her story too. Here is Donna Andrews reading her private eye tale, Normal, from the May 2011 issue of EQMM.
"Which one of you is the P.I.?" the tipsy woman asked. She spilled a little of her fruity rum drink on Bart's trouser leg. "I am," I said. "C.J. Gray, at your service." She blinked and stared at me. "Okay, I look like a 14-year-old girl, especially in the cave's dim lighting, but I was sipping wine. Did she think the bartender would risk the joint's liquor license to serve me?" I liked the gloom. That and the general live-and-let-live attitude. As long as you paid and weren't underage, the bartenders couldn't care less what you did. The other patrons were either too drunk to notice anything strange or too drunk to worry. When they looked at my table, all they saw was an elderly wino, a badly dressed man with the bulk and battered nose of an ex-boxer, and a 7-foot albino transvestite. Magnus was arguably a wino, but in his occasional moments of sobriety he was a half-competent wizard. In a better light, people might not recognize Bart as a full-grown ogre, but they'd sure as hell know he wasn't from their normal reality. And Tay wasn't an albino. Elves are naturally pale. I wasn't sure about the transvestite part, since in the year the elf had been working as my secretary, I hadn't determined Tay's gender. Maybe Tay just had flamboyant taste in clothing. The woman stared at them briefly. I could almost see the moment when she stopped worrying and chalked up their odd appearances to the rum. "What can I do for you?" I asked as I studied her. She was plump but pretty. She'd look better in clothes that weren't 2 sizes too small. Her hair probably wasn't naturally blonde. "I need a P.I.," she said. "I think maybe my husband is, you know." Yeah, I knew. If I ever got my agency on solid financial ground, the first thing I'd do was cut out domestic work. But for now, it kept all of us from starving. "Maybe you could come around to my office tomorrow," I said. She looked anxious. "I'd rather not be seen there," she said. She'd rather be seen in a dive like the cave? No accounting for taste. "Have a seat, then," I said. "Bart and Magnus are my operatives, and Tay's my administrative assistant. Tay, would you take notes on my conversation with Mrs. Candy Brown?" she said. "That's C-A-N-D-E-E. Tay pulled a steno pad and a pen out of the immense leather tote at our feet and began scribbling rapidly, the picture of efficient discretion. Bart tried to look reassuring, and to my relief he smiled the faint, close-mouthed smile we'd been working on, the smile that did not reveal his razor-sharp pointed incisors. Magnus just polished off his drink and signaled to the bartender for a refill. Magnus had time for several refills, and our client accumulated several more paper parasols before she finished telling us, in infinite detail, the sad story of her marriage to Oleg Brown. Honestly, if you marry a bartender who wasn't quite rid of his 5th wife when he started dating you, do you have the right to be surprised when he starts auditioning waitresses for number 7? But if people always did the sensible thing, PIs would have a lot less work. Tay ran back to the office to fetch a standard contract. Candy handed over a sufficiently large cash retainer, along with blurry photos of Oleg and the cocktail waitress, the waitress's address, and the name of the joint where they both worked. "We'll get started right away," I assured Mrs. Brown. We watched her stumble up the steps out of the cave. "Want me to take the first surveillance shift?" Bart asked. "Monday will be good enough," I said. "But you told her we'd start right away," Bart said. I sighed. Ogres can be so literal. "And we start by checking her out," I said. "We only have her word for it that she's married to this guy and has any kind of right to know about his whereabouts. What if she's some crazed stalker?" "I'll hit the courthouse Monday." "I can start a background check on the computer right now," Tay said. "I don't mind scoping out the bar on my own time," Bart said. "Remember, the sooner we start, the sooner we can bill her for more hours," Magnus agreed. "We need the money." "Okay," I said. I hated it when they were right. Bart, Magnus, you go over to the bar and start figuring out if there's anything between the husband and the alleged girlfriend. Tay, do your magic on the keyboard. Tay happily waved the 3-inch fake talons that somehow didn't interfere with typing. What about you, boss? Bart asked. I'll see what I can do tomorrow, I said. Tonight I'm having dinner with my mother, remember? That put a damper on the conversation. Tay had never met my mother, but had heard all the stories. Bart and Magnus both knew exactly what a horrible time I was in for. Mother is a sorceress, and queen of a minor kingdom in the world where I was born. My complete lack of magical skill is a never-ending source of embarrassment to her. As soon as I came of age, I formally renounced my place in the line of succession and fled here, to the world that created my idols, Hammett, Chandler, Sayers, and Christie. Growing up, I fantasized about them the way kids in this world dreamed about dragons and unicorns. I'd brought along Bart, my childhood bodyguard, and Magnus, my tutor. Magnus actually gave me a decent magical education. I knew all the standard spells, the words, gestures, props, and ingredients, but they just didn't work for me. Spells, potions, charms, curses, amulets, nothing. Magnus didn't cause my lack of talent. He only diagnosed it. Even so, Mother, irrationally, never quite forgave him. I'm not sure he ever forgave himself. At any rate, his career, never exactly spectacular, stalled, and then went down in flames after he became my tutor. He was making a fairly successful attempt to drink himself to death when I'd finally decided to emigrate to this world. Actually, he was still doing a pretty good job of it. Which reminds me, I said, Magnus, I assume you'd have mentioned by now if there was anything unusual about our client. She's normal, he said. Human. Nothing hinky. That was one of his main jobs, warning me if I ran into anyone who wasn't exactly an ordinary human. Tay and Bart could do the same thing sometimes, but not nearly as well as Magnus. And it was surprising how often I needed him to use that talent. In addition to the Chandler and Hammett connections, I'd picked this universe because it was the most mundane one I could find. But every time I turned around, I ran into someone from another, more exotic reality. Maybe they sought me out. Maybe my entourage attracted them. Maybe if I didn't hang out with ogres, elves, and wizards, I shoved the thought aside. Right now, I needed them. And more important, they needed me. Okay, you three get started, I said. I'll dive in first thing in the morning, assuming I can avoid committing matricide tonight. Don't let Her Majesty get you down, Magnus said as we paused for a moment on the sidewalk outside. Magic isn't everything. Remember, you have a first-class brain. A first-class brain that, according to Mother, I'd wasted by filling it full of noir PI stories and English manor house mysteries. And so far, I hadn't figured out how to use my superior brain to make more than a meager living. If I couldn't make a go of my agency, we were all in trouble. It wasn't as if any of us knew how to do anything else. I put on the confident, happy face I always tried to wear when I went home for a visit. The nearby church clock began chiming. I ducked behind a dumpster just in time to hear the 7th and last chime before Mother's teleportation spell hit me. Dinner was ghastly, but only the familiar, normal sort of ghastly. I politely declined another offer to meet a minor princeling who didn't care if his wife had magical power or not. I smiled politely as my kid sister showed off her latest spells. We were waiting for dessert when my cell phone rang. That's weird, I said. Who'd have thought I could get a signal here? I pulled the phone out, and everyone else averted their eyes, as if I'd suddenly thrown a dead hedgehog on the table. I checked the caller ID. Bart. This better be good, I snapped by way of a greeting. No, it's bad, Bart said. Very bad. Something's happened to Magnus. He's been shot. Mother was sympathetic, or pretended to be. She sent me back immediately. A few minutes after I materialized behind the dumpster, startling a mangy cat, a small paper bag popped into being a couple of yards away. A doggy bag. My stomach churned at the sight, and I left it for the cat, or any other scavenger that wanted it. It was nearly 2 by the time I made my phone call to the police, and just before dawn I found myself standing in the morgue, looking down at Magnus. Yeah, I said. My voice was surprisingly rough. The detective shifted uneasily. He probably thought I was about to cry. I wasn't sure he was wrong. That's Magnus. Magnus Albertson. He worked for me. Sorry for your loss, Miss Gray, the detective said. You were close? He was like a father to me, I said. And I realized it was true. My own father had barely stayed around long enough to produce me, which, given the way Mother usually treated unfaithful lovers, was probably wise. Magnus had been the one who read me bedtime stories, lifted me onto my first pony, and tried in vain to share his magic with me. "What happened?" I took refuge in a businesslike tone. "Shot twice at close range with a small-caliber weapon," the detective said. He sounded relieved that the threat of tears had vanished. "Probably a .22. Once in the abdomen and once in the throat. He'd have bled out pretty quickly." He was trying to reassure me that Magnus hadn't suffered much, but I already knew he'd died quickly. If the killer had just left Magnus bleeding in that alley, he probably would have healed himself. The detective led me back to his office and stuck a cup of coffee in my hands. I don't drink coffee, but I locked my fingers around it. The warmth felt good. "Can you tell me what he was working on?" "Yeah, I could." I'd stopped by the office on my way to make a copy of my case file, which hadn't taken long, since it contained only the contract, the photos, and addresses Candy had given me, and a few articles Tay had found online that mentioned the bar where Oleg and his girlfriend worked. The folder was so thin the detective looked inside to make sure it wasn't empty. "Not much here," he said. "She's been a client for about 10 hours, I said. "How much could we find in such a short time?" "Maybe your partner found something," he said. "Then again, more likely his murder had nothing to do with your case. In a neighborhood like that?" He shrugged. "Thanks anyway," he added. "Can we give you a ride home?" "Some friends are waiting outside," I said. "Thanks anyway." To my surprise, I hadn't lied. Bart's battered van was waiting down the street. He and Tay were in the front seat. "What the hell happened?" I asked as I climbed into the back. "Magnus got shot," Bart said. "I know that," I snapped. "I was parked in front of the bar, waiting to see if they left that way," Bart said. "Magnus went to do the back door." I nodded. By doing the back door, I assumed he meant that Magnus was going to cast some kind of spell on it. A ward to notify them if the husband or the girlfriend left through the back door, or maybe some subtle spell to make them disinclined to use it. This wasn't the time to lecture Bart and Tay about the stupidity of using methods that were alien to this world, and, more important, couldn't be taken to a mundane court. "He didn't come back," Bart continued, "and I waited a long time. Then I saw the police and the ambulance go by. I asked someone what was happening, and they said someone had shot an old bum in the alley. I figured they meant Magnus." "What should we do now?" Tay asked. I knew the smart thing to do was mind our own business and let the cops solve Magnus's murder. But I rebelled at the thought. They killed Magnus, whoever they were. As a wizard, he may have been a burned-out, gin-soaked has-been, but he was my burned-out, gin-soaked has-been, and I resented like hell that someone had knocked him off. "Okay," I said. "We operate on the assumption that Magnus's murder had something to do with our case. Bart, you do surveillance on the husband. I'll stake out the girlfriend's place. Tay, find out everything you can about those two." "Right, boss," they said, almost in unison. They probably thought I knew what I was doing. I lucked out. Across from the girlfriend's apartment building was a small coffee shop with a free wireless connection and almost no customers. I fetched my laptop and some books from my trunk, snagged a table in the front window, and settled in to give a convincing imitation of a student trying to pound out a term paper in a hurry. About noon, Bart called me. "I think we've got problems, boss," he said. "Tell me something I don't already know." "New problems," he said. "You got your cell phone? I could send you a picture from mine." There was the predictable delay while Bart fumbled with buttons that were not designed for fingers as large as his. Then a picture came into view on the tiny screen. It was tilted to the left and slightly fuzzy, but still a lot better picture of Candy's husband than the one she had given us. I could see what Bart meant. "Am I seeing what I think I'm seeing?" I asked. "Yeah," Bart said. "He's a troll." I studied the photo. Natives of this world probably just saw a large, heavy-set man with Neanderthal features and over-large teeth. I wondered what Candy saw in Oleg. I could guess what he saw in the aptly named Candy. To a troll, a plump young human was better than filet mignon and lobster. I sent the picture to Tay with orders to focus the computer search on Mr. Brown's past. About 2 p.m., I got a call from my client. "The police came to talk to me," she said. "Thank goodness Oleg was out when they got here. What's going on?" "One of my operatives was killed last night while following your husband," I said. A gasp. A few moments of silence. "Oh, my God," she exclaimed. "Do you think I'm in danger?" "Thanks a lot for your sympathy, Candy." She babbled hysterically for several minutes, and I made appropriate reassuring noises while trying to decide whether to spill what we'd learned about her husband. Finally, I made an appointment to see her in the morning. I'd sleep on the question. or maybe I'd just continue to fret about it while watching the girlfriend's door. Sooner or later she had to come out, or come home. A patrol car pulled up, and two uniformed officers accompanied a suit-clad man into the building. They came out again a few minutes later, and I recognized the suit as the detective I'd spoken to. They left, but it only took me half an hour to spot the car with the surveillance team. The day wore on. By nightfall, the waitstaff were definitely giving me the evil eye, even though I'd consumed several gallons of coffee and at least a dozen pastries. But at last my luck changed. The front door of the apartment building opened, and the tall, slender, but shapely figure of the troll's girlfriend emerged. I glanced at my watch, pretended to realize I was late for an appointment, and began throwing things into my laptop case. The girlfriend strolled to the corner and waited while a couple of cars passed. I paused in the vestibule of the coffee shop and scanned the community bulletin board as if fascinated by the poster for the lost miniature schnauzer. The girlfriend crossed the street and turned in the direction of the coffee shop. I shifted so my back was to the door and adjusted my hair in the mirror tiles that flanked the doorway in a vain attempt to make the vestibule seem larger. In a few seconds I saw the girlfriend's reflection as she passed the coffeehouse doors. She was a vampire. There's a grain of truth behind the old wives' tale that you can't see a vampire's reflection in a mirror. You can see them all right, but the reflection never quite looks normal. I wasn't quite sure what gave her away. A flash of fang behind the full lips, an overly hollow cheekbone, or perhaps a hint of too deep pallor beneath the perfect makeup. But suddenly I saw, and could never unsee. Just then I spotted the cops from the parked car following her. I let a few more seconds pass, then stepped outside, leaned against the side of the building, and pulled out my cell phone, as if I'd paused to give my full attention to my call. It would help if I actually called someone. I called Tay. "Have you found out anything about the girlfriend?" I asked. Tay hadn't. Another nondescript sedan pulled up in front of the vampire, and the detective got out. "She's not what she seems," I said into the phone. "Another troll?" "A vamp." "Oh, my." Yes, they were arresting the girlfriend. If Magnus were alive, and here, I'd have been tempted to break my own rule, and have him cast a spell so we could hear what the cop and the vamp were saying. But if Magnus were alive, they wouldn't be arresting her. "What could a troll and a vampire possibly have in common?" Tay asked. "Do you think they killed Magnus?" "I don't know," I said. "Seems unlikely." "Neither a troll nor a vampire exactly needs a gun to kill someone." "But if they were trying to be unobtrusive?" "Yeah, tearing people limb from limb and draining them of blood are both pretty conspicuous ways of killing," I said. "Stuff like that tends to get the cops' attention. They probably see enough shooting deaths to get a little blasé about them." "I'll see what I can find out," Tay said. I kept the phone to my ear after Tay hung up and pretended to be talking on it until the drama of the girlfriend's arrest had run its course. Then I headed back to my own neighborhood. I had a solitary dinner at my favorite cheap Vietnamese dive and went up to my office. Tay was in the outer room shutting down the computer when I got there. "Find anything?" "Lots," Tay said, waving at the door to my private office. I could see a 2-inch thick stack of papers on my desk. "And take a gander at this." Tay turned on our little office TV, fiddled with the TiVo remote, and the familiar face of the local CBS news anchor filled the screen. Tay hadn't turned the sound up, but I could still tell what was going on. The screen behind the anchor held a grainy enlargement of Magnus's driver's license photo, and the picture then cut to Candy's husband, handcuffed, being eased into a squad car. My sources say they found the gun that killed Magnus in his car, and an earring belonging to the girlfriend in the alley, Tay said. Looks like the troll and the vamp made Magnus, and decided to shut him down before he blew the whistle on whatever they were up to. I wanted to ask, blow the whistle to whom? It wasn't as if this world had some kind of magical tribunal where you could report the sort of mischief that a troll and a vampire might get into, separately or worse, together. Almost everyone in this world who knew that trolls and vampires even existed was here to get away from such tribunals. I didn't think much of the police's chance of holding on to their suspects, either. Once they were out on bail, both would probably flit to other cities, if not other worlds. If the jail cells weren't bat-proof, the vamp might not even need bail. And I didn't like the idea of Magnus's killers going unpunished. Tay paused, head cocked to one side, and then glanced toward the door, which meant that I knew when the knock came that our visitor wasn't from around here. Tay opened the door and a troll walked in. With typical troll rudeness, he didn't even bother to introduce himself. "My brother didn't kill your wizard," he said, "and for what it's worth, I don't like that leech he's been hanging around with, but I bet she didn't do it either." "I know they didn't," I said. Tay probably thought I was lying to get rid of the troll. I realized to my surprise that I wasn't.
"Then who did?"
"I don't know yet."
"So what are you going to do about it?" the troll asked.
"I don't know that either."
"What do you mean you don't know?" the troll shouted. "You got to do something. If you hadn't taken that bimbo's case, none of this would have happened. If
your brother and his blood-sucking girlfriend hadn't been planning to dine on my client, she wouldn't have hired me," I shouted back. "And then my wizard wouldn't be dead, and your brother and the vamp wouldn't be in jail. I get that part, and I'm going to do something about it. I just haven't figured out what, so get lost."
The troll backed away from the heat of my anger. He reached into his pocket, pulled out a soiled business card, and handed it to me. It was a card from a motorcycle shop that, rumor had it, catered to gangs and thugs. "You can leave a message for me there. Say it's for Newt." Which wasn't his name, of course, but the management of the bike shop would know who I meant.
"I'll let you know if I find out anything," I said.
"Or just call me if you want to talk," Newt said. "Always happy to talk to a pretty lady like you."
He smiled. He'd clearly mastered the same tooth-concealing smile I'd been trying to teach Bart.
"Get lost, Newt," I said. "I'm too small to be more than an appetizer, and too tough to be appetizing."
Newt shrugged and left.
"He'll be back," Tay said. "Want me to stick around?"
"I'd rather you followed him," I said. "Keep an eye on him."
"Right, boss," Tay said. I went into my office and sat at my desk, reading through the stack of papers Tay had left for me. Candy was right to be worried. Her husband and the vampire were old friends, and if you knew what to look for, you could probably deduce that they had done in his previous 5 wives. But I didn't have a single shred of evidence that would stand up in the court. Not in this world. Going to the police would be futile. Someone knocked on my door. I hesitated. I felt surprisingly vulnerable, with no one to warn me if my visitor turned out to be something other than human. So I did what other human PIs do. I got my gun out of the desk drawer and slipped it into my pocket before opening the door. I relaxed a little when I saw it was only Candy, the one normal human in this whole case.
"Hello, Candy," I said.
"I couldn't wait till tomorrow," she said. "May I come in?"
"Sure."
I stepped back and followed her into my office. She sat down in my guest chair, looking around as if she expected something to jump out of the shadows at her. "I was about to call you anyway," I said, sitting down behind my desk.
"I'm in danger," she said. "I can feel it. I'm leaving tonight."
"I can see why you would feel that way," I said, and leaving town's probably a good idea. The situation's more complicated than you realize."
"You found out something."
I hesitated. I sat there, staring at Candy and wishing she'd waited till morning. I hadn't yet figured out how to explain the danger she was in, at least not in terms a person like Candy, a normal person, could understand. And then the pieces fell into place.
"Of course," I said aloud. "The only normal person in the case."
"What's that?" Candy asked.
"Never mind," I said. "Okay, here goes. Your husband's a troll."
"Well, I already told you that," she said, "the two-timing jerk." "No, I mean really a troll," I said, "as in lurks under bridges, muttering fee-fi-fo-fum."
"Ha ha," Candy said. I could see she didn't get it.
"The bad news is I can't find any record that he divorced any of his first 5 wives."
"The rat," she exclaimed. "But don't worry," I said. "He probably ate them, so odds are you're not a polygamist."
"You have a sick sense of humor," she said. "This isn't a joke. When Ola gets out of jail, he's going to come after me."
"He probably will," I said. "And he'll probably be pretty steamed that you tried to frame him for a murder you committed."
"Me?" She drew back as if from a snake. "You're crazy. What makes you think I did it?"
"Your husband's a troll, and his girlfriend's a vampire," I said. "Both dangerous to be around, even for a wizard like Magnus. And Magnus would have known that the second he saw them. But you're just an ordinary human being like me."
"You're insane," she said.
"Magnus wasn't much of a gumshoe," I went on, "but he was too good a magician to be caught like that. He'd never have followed a troll or a vampire down that alley. But he'd have gone there with you, Candy. He was just dumb enough for that. He'd have looked you up and down and licked his lips and gone, grinning from ear to ear."
"Actually, he probably wouldn't have unless she was waving a bottle of bourbon at him. But how often does a private eye get such a perfect chance to paraphrase Hammett?" Alas, Candy didn't seem to appreciate my literary allusion.
"This is awful," she said. She reached down, picked up her purse, and began fumbling in it.
I wanted a competent PI, and I managed to hire a lunatic. This is...
Drop the purse, Candy, I said. If you need a tissue, there is a box on my desk. And if you have any thoughts of using that gun in your purse, the one that matches the one you planted in your husband's car, don't even try it. I showed her my own Ladysmith 38.
Boss?
We both jumped. It was Bart. I was glad to see him. Candy pretended to be.
Thank goodness you're here, she said, with much eyelash fluttering. She's crazy, and she pulled a gun on me and...
Search her purse, Bart, I said. She probably has a gun there. If she does, take it away from her. Carefully. No fingerprints. Bart was wide-eyed with astonishment, but fortunately ogres are not only very literal, but very good at following orders. His hand was too big to fit into her purse, so he had to dig around with one stubby finger. He held up a cheap Saturday night special. Unload it, give me the bullets, and then put it back in her purse. You can't prove anything, Candy said as she watched Bart follow my orders. If you go to the cops with all this crap about trolls and vampires, they'll lock you up, not me.
You're right, I said, which is why I'm asking you to turn yourself in.
She snorted.
Tell them it was an accident, I said. Tell them it was self-defense, that you thought he was about to assault you. Tell whatever damn lies you like. But tell them you did it.
And what'll you do if I say no?
Nothing, I said. Please do it.
She probably misinterpreted the pleading note in my voice. She simpered a little, no doubt thinking she held all the cards.
If you don't turn yourself in, I continued, I won't lift a finger to protect you.
I don't need your protection, Candy said. Once I leave town, I won't be in any danger.
The phone rang. Tay.
Boss, he didn't go far. He's hiding in the alley across the street from our office, watching the door.
That's fine, I said. You can stop watching him now. Come on back to the office.
Boss?
I hung up.
Last chance, I said to Candy. I can call the police for you if you like.
Forget it, she said. She picked up her purse, tucked the gun inside, batted her eyes one more time at Bart, and tripped out. I could hear the tap-tap-tap of her high heels down the hall to the elevator.
Boss?
Bart asked.
I'll explain later, I said. I went over to the window and stared down at the street below. I saw Candy emerge from the front door, and almost imagined I could hear the tap-tap-tap of her shoes as she walked down the street. I saw a large shadow emerge from the alley. Newt was looking up at me. He tilted his head as if asking a question. I nodded once. Newt turned and hurried off in the same direction Candy had taken.
Boss?
Tay had returned. Or maybe Tay had been there for a while, watching me stare out the window.
Go home, I said. I don't want to talk about it now.
I finally told them what I'd done the next day. They were fine with it, of course. But I didn't expect an elf and an ogre to understand my guilt. I turned over a human woman, one of my own species, to certain death at the hands of a monster. The fact that she was another kind of monster should have made me feel better, but it didn't. The police didn't share my conviction that Candy was the killer. I couldn't blame them. The only really convincing evidence I had would have made me sound like a lunatic if I'd shared it with them. Eventually, I convinced them I knew nothing about Candy's whereabouts. A few nights later, I was about to close up shop and head for the cave, where I'd been spending way too much time, when Tay and Bart sidled into my office.
"Can it wait till tomorrow?" I asked.
"I don't think so," Tay said. "I just came back to make sure I'd turned off my computer and found... well, you need to see it." It was Magnus. His body, at least, sitting in one of the two thrift shop armchairs in the end of the outer office that served as a reception area.
"I thought you said he was dead," Bart said.
"I did," I said. "He was."
"Is."
Tay took a step forward and grimaced. "Can't you tell by the smell?"
"Wasn't he in the morgue?" I asked. "How did his body get back here?"
"Good questions, boss," Bart said, though I didn't think anyone was about to answer them, unfortunately, since I had others even better. Like, who brought Magnus here, and why had they propped him in a chair in the corner of my waiting room? I spotted something attached to the lapel of Magnus's rumpled tweed jacket. I stepped closer and peered at it. It was a folded gift tag made of lavender foil and flecked with silver glitter. A thin silver thread attached it to one of the buttonholes. I opened it and read it aloud. "To Cassandra, with love, from Mother."
"Oh dear," Tay said. "Have I forgotten some occasion?"
"That's your mother's idea of a present," Bart said. "A smelly old stiff." Just then Magnus moved. His hands gripped the chair arms. I stepped back. His eyes flew open. I stared into them,
and what I saw made me seriously consider matricide.
"Oh, great," I muttered.
"He's alive?" Bart said.
"Not exactly," I said. "He's a zombie."
"Ew!" Tay exclaimed.
Magnus's eyes shifted to Tay, and I found myself suddenly very glad he wasn't looking at me any longer. I'd never actually seen a zombie in the flesh before, but I knew about them. Ironically, it was Magnus who had insisted I learn about them to begin with. At least he could still appreciate a good brain, if only in a culinary sense.
"What are we going to do with him?" Tay asked.
"I don't know," I said. "I now very definitely need a drink. We're going to the cave."
"We can't just leave him here," Tay said.
"No, we can't," I said. "Come on, Magnus. Cave time." Magnus followed readily enough, and no one at the cave seemed to notice the difference. I ordered a round for everyone, including Magnus, because the bartender knew us well enough that he'd think it was weird if Magnus didn't have a glass in front of him. I was surprised to find Magnus still remembered how to lift a glass. Surprised and at first relieved. A Magnus who still remembered how to drink would look a lot more natural, I thought.
"This isn't going to work," Bart said. "We poured a whole bottle of that Aqua Velva stuff on him, and he still reeks."
"Your nose is more sensitive than most humans' noses," I said, "and he should improve over time as he desiccates a bit."
"And he's got a drinking problem, too," Tay said.
I glanced over at Magnus. He didn't look drunk. He was watching the other patrons with a level of interest he'd never shown before. The other patrons and me, contemplating how tasty our brains would be, no doubt, and waiting until he thought we wouldn't notice before trying to abscond with one. He didn't seem the least bit interested in Bart or Tay, though, which was fascinating and possibly useful. Maybe I could still count on him to spot any non-humans who came our way. I sighed, lifted my Tom Collins, and took a couple of long swallows. Magnus imitated me. A small stream of bourbon squirted out the bullet hole in the left side of his neck, and then another out of his abdomen. I don't know what people thought of the top leak, but from the side, the bottom one looked as if he was peeing himself.
"See?" Tay said.
"Can't hold his liquor," I said, nodding. "We'll have to do something about that. Meanwhile, which one of you is the P.I.?"
A tall, saturnine man in a trench coat stood by our table. Magnus glanced up and then went back to staring at the taller of the two waitresses. Clearly, our visitor was no normal human. I'd have told him to get lost, but we needed the money.
"I am," I said, "C.J. Gray. What can I do for you?"
Normal is copyrighted by Donna Andrews. Music for the podcast was taken from Bach's Toccata and Fugue in D minor, as performed by the Philadelphia Orchestra on April 6, 1927. It was restored by Bob Varney and made available through the community audio section of the Internet Archive. Mixing for the podcast was done by Jackie Sherbo. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one, by visiting our website at www.themysteryplace.com/EQMM.